You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 3rd of November, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, once again, it's a bit of a short news day. I know we've got some excitement happening over in Austria. There's been a terrorist attack, took place yesterday. I believe there are 4 dead, something like that so far. They've only managed to catch one man. It's another Islamic attack. Obviously, there are videos online. But this is now just becoming so common here in Europe, isn't it? I've lost count of the number of Islamic attacks that we've had just this year. Just the number that we've had in France in the last month is hard to recall. It is becoming more and more common. And the only reason it can happen is because we imported Islamists into our countries. We imported Muslims into our country, knowing all the problems that we have had with Muslims in the past, knowing that their religion seeks to conquer the world and put everybody under Sharia law. They're quite open about it. They haven't changed. They haven't suddenly become liberal. This idea of moderate Muslims and liberal Islam, it only exists in the West. It only exists in European countries where the Islamists use that as a cover to say, well, this isn't really Islam. Islam isn't really about beheading the unbelievers, despite the fact it says in the Quran to behead the unbelievers. And once again, you can't really criticize these people for having a different religion to us. That's their religion. They have very strict laws in their countries that work. They work for them, but they are Arabs. They are not us. And I'm not trying to incite any hatred against Muslims here. I'm saying that works for them. That's the way that they have developed. That's the way they have evolved to run their societies. And we should have known better than to import them into our societies. We knew exactly what it was going to be like. We knew exactly how things were going to go. And yet our leaders still imported them. Well, today, rather than really getting into the news, I wanted to clarify some of what I was talking about yesterday when I was pointing out about the Public Order Act and the hate speech laws that we have here in Britain. And a lot of people will say, well, it's against the law to speak the truth. And what I was trying to point out yesterday is that it's not actually against the law to speak the truth, because we are the ones who are responsible for the situation that we're in. It's no good trying to palm off that responsibility onto others, because in effect, what you are saying there is, well, the white race is just too weak to prevent these things happening to itself, and all the ethnic minorities are just so superior to us that they just invaded our country and we couldn't stop them from doing that. And that's a nonsense. That's a victim mentality there. And we shouldn't be seeing ourselves as victims. We should be seeing ourselves as victors. We brought civilization to the rest of the world. We colonized the rest of the world. We tamed the wilderness. I mean, even the lowest of our people, and I don't mean to be insulting Australians here, but the lowest of our people in England, the uneducated, those who were accused of crimes, those who lived in the villages and worked on the land, they were rounded up, accused of being criminals, and sent to Australia. And within 100 years, they had built a first world country that was the envy of the rest of the world. And that is with the lowest of our breeding stock. we are capable of doing that. We're not victims. We're victors. What has happened is, over the last few hundred years, we have fallen to temptation. We've fallen to greed. We have fallen to pride in particular. And we have allowed our virtues to be misused. Our virtue of loving our neighbor as ourself, which should apply only to our own people. That's who your neighbor is. It is he who looks like you, your kinsman. We have extended that to all these other races, to all the other competitors for us, or competitors with us, I should say, rather, for the limited territories that we have within the world. We've, in effect, done this to ourselves. And we can say, well, we disagree with this as nationalists. We disagree with this. But we can't change it. We can't just wave a magic wand and go back in time and change the last century. We have to live with the results of our actions. And by that, I mean, you can look at this almost as if it's a game, and you have rules of the game, and you have to stick to the rules of the game. You can't cheat. You can't say, oh, well, I don't agree with what the government did 20 years ago, so I'm just going to disobey the government. I mean, we developed rules and a system of law, and we developed the democracy that we have, and we have to work within that framework. So we have to look at what the hate speech laws are. We have to look at what the Public Order Act is. We have to make sure that we keep within that. And we have to make sure that we're not advocating for anything that could be misconstrued as violence. And I think we have to look for positive ways that we can reach people, particularly with our propaganda, saying the most positive things possible, like love your nation, which seems to drive the mainstream media absolutely berserk when they hear things like that. And that's fantastic propaganda for us. We don't need to have negative propaganda that makes us look bad. What we want is to make the mainstream media look bad and expose how much they hate us, because they really do hate us. And if anybody should really be charged with incitement to hate, it should be the mainstream media. Just look at what's gone on this summer over in America. The total destruction of America's cities, all based upon false reports of the police somehow hunting down black people and just murdering them for the colour of their skin. That's the narrative that the mainstream media has been pushing. They've been pushing a narrative of hate the police, hate the white man, destroy everything that you can to take reparations for the white man's oppression. That's what the mainstream media has been pushing. It has caused untold damage. It's caused billions of dollars worth of damage to private property and businesses in America. And yet nobody is going after them. Nobody is pointing out that it's the mainstream media that are the biggest inciters to hatred and violence in the world today. But more and more people are waking up to that, and they're realizing that because we now have our independent media, which they're trying to shut down as much as they can. They are now putting video sharing sites under the remit of Ofcom. Ofcom is responsible for licensed broadcasting, basically television and licensed radio, FM radio. And to put Ofcom in charge of private conversations, private conversations is essentially what a video is. Somebody makes a video, they record their view of the world, they may be letting off steam, they may be doing some investigative journalism, and they want to report what they have discovered to an audience, and they upload it to a site where they can share that. And it's essentially making a voice recording, or like you do on your telephone, where if somebody calls you up and you get a voice recording. It's essentially that, but it's a video recording, and anybody that wants to hear what you say can go and have a look at that. Ofcom should have no business regulating what people say. But they have given this responsibility to Ofcom to regulate video sharing sites. Now, this is specifically, I think, is so that they can target BitChute. They have had it in for BitChute for quite some time now. BitChute, I think, have responded in exactly the correct way. There were news reports a while back highlighting that there was illegal content on BitChute. Of course, there shouldn't be illegal content on there. And it's up to the users of the BitChute site to flag up content like that so that BitChute can remove it. Obviously, they don't want to have illegal content on their site, content that supports prescribed organizations, for instance. They need to be removing that. And in the newspaper report, Hope Not Hate, the parallel spy agency in Britain, Hope Not Hate reported that they had identified a number of videos on BitChute that shouldn't be there, and they were calling for the site to be banned. And BitChute's response to that was, well, Hope Not Hate haven't told us about this, and we would invite Hope Not Hate to report any of the videos that they find to us so that we can then remove them. And that is the correct response. Why didn't Hope Not Hate make their identifications of these videos that shouldn't be there? Why didn't they tell the people concerned so that they could remove them? Why were they going and essentially trying to get the organization into trouble instead of working with them? So now BitChute again have done the correct thing, and they have said, we would invite Hope Not Hate, who have the expertise in this area. They have lots and lots of money. They work with YouTube and all the rest of it. We would invite them to work with us and tell us something that should be illegal. And quite clearly, BitChute are not going to say, well, we'll just remove this anyway, even if it is legal. If what people are saying is legal, then it shouldn't be removed. And obviously we know Hope Not Hate and the ADL and all the rest of them, that they want to remove anything that is critical of certain government policies. But there's nothing to make these organizations remove things that are critical of government policies unless they're illegal. And that's the difference between BitChute and YouTube. YouTube will remove anything that's critical of Joe Biden. They'll remove anything that supports QAnon. They'll remove anything that talks about an alternative viewpoint on what went on in World War II. All of these things, they're not illegal, but YouTube will remove them. I don't think BitChute will remove them. But they should have the option of knowing what is likely to cause offence or be against the law and what isn't, so that they can make that decision. And if they've got Hope Not Hate reporting these videos to them, then they can make that decision. They don't have to remove everything that Hope Not Hate shows to them. And the more people they can get to actually look through and identify what might potentially be illegal, the more chance BitChute has of staying online. So I think they're doing the right thing here. And I think if anybody sees anything on BitChute that, say, supports a prescribed organization or incites violence, then that should be reported. Do your duty and report it so that we keep BitChute online. We do need to keep it online. And also, content creators need to be aware of what the law is and what the law actually says and the Public Order Act. And it's all about incitement to hate, and they have to show that there is an intent there to actually incite people to hate, and it only applies to certain protected groups or protected characteristics. So it would be ethnic minorities, Jews, homosexuals, transgenders, disabled people. I think they even include the aged now in this as well. So if you are going to be talking about those subjects, those sensitive subjects, and say you are going to be pointing out something negative that is associated with them, then you have to make it clear that what you're doing is not because you're trying to get people to hate this group in society. What you're doing is you're pointing out the effect that the group has on society and the government policies that have allowed that to happen. You have to make it clear that it is the government that you are criticizing, and you're not trying to get people to hate these other groups. And in actual fact, if you're pointing out group behavior, if you're saying, for instance, blacks in particular who have a much lower average IQ than whites, the lower average IQ is associated with a higher crime rate, and we see a higher crime rate amongst blacks wherever they are in the world. Now, if you are pointing that out, you're effectively saying, well, it's more natural for these people to be committing crimes than it is for whites. So in actual fact, you shouldn't be judging them in the same way that you judge whites. They don't have the same sense of self-control. that white people have. So in actual fact, you're not inciting hate against them. You're inciting sympathy for them, for their behavior. And you then direct the blame for that on our government, because they knew that black people were susceptible to crime, and yet they still imported them into our country. So the criticism is aimed directly at the government, and you can still identify the problems that are being caused by these different groups in our society that we need the government to do something about. And what we're doing is we're suggesting different policies to deal with these problems than the government are. The government think that the way to deal with these problems is to import more diversity into areas that don't have it, and to try and make more draconian speech laws to prevent people from speaking up about the patterns that they observe in society. That isn't going to help anything. That is just going to make the situation worse. That is just going to make resentment worse. Our solution to this problem is to separate the peoples so that we have black people over there and white people over here. And then there can't be any more racism. There would be no more racism. There wasn't any racism in Britain. I was reading a report a while back, and it was from somebody involved with the emancipation of the slaves. And he came to England and he said that there was no racism at all in Britain. None whatsoever, because there was never any slavery in Britain. And that was the point that he was making. But the real point is there was no racism in Britain because there were no black people in Britain. There was no chance for there to be any friction between the races, because there weren't different races in Britain at the time. We just had white people there. And if you look at the way white people have always been, we've always had an interest in the natural world. We developed the science of anthropology, the study of these different tribes, these different peoples that were all at different stages in their group evolution as a group. Some of them had, some of them were more civilized than others. Some of them were still there in the Stone Age, but we were absolutely fascinated by these peoples. We were recording what they do, the different systems that they have within their societies. There was never any, oh, we are superior to you and we dislike you because of the colour of your skin nonsense. It was all, we're fascinated by this. This is amazing. We need to protect these people. It was white people that put provisions in place so that these tribes that were still essentially living in the Stone Age, so that they weren't at risk from catching diseases from us, or they weren't at risk of having their lands taken away for mining. It was white people that protected these people, because we are a charitable people, and our charitable instincts are now being misused against us by being extended further than they should be, much further than they should be. Our charitable instincts should extend to protecting these groups within their own territories, within their own habitats, and making sure that the habitats aren't going to be endangered, aren't going to be strip mined, that they aren't going to catch diseases. That's what our charity should be about. Our charity should not be about inviting all these people to come into our own countries, because that's just going to cause chaos and friction. We know this. We know that the more different peoples you have within a territory, the more likelihood there is that society is going to fracture and end in civil war. And this happens even when you have people groups that are very, very closely related. If you look at what happens in the Balkans at the last century, for instance, you have a people that ethnically are the same, and yet they have different cultures. They've developed slightly different languages. You've got Greece, Serbia, Albania, Macedonia, Bulgaria, Romania. All these areas that ended up fighting amongst one another because they're all in this small area. And when you put, like in Czechoslovakia, when you have two different groups in one area, they end up fighting amongst one another. Look at the Serbs and the Bosniaks in just this century. In Kosovo, and you have two different people groups there, and they end up fighting amongst one another, but they are essentially the same ethnicity. So when you move in people groups that are entirely different, people groups that come from different races, that is just a recipe for disaster. Now, this isn't hatred. This isn't inciting hatred against these peoples. This is pointing out that people are different. We are not all the same. And when you put people that are very, very different together in one territory, they are going to fight amongst one another. There is going to be friction. So, and we don't want that friction. We don't want there to be fighting between all the different peoples in the world. We certainly don't want to see ethnic strife on the streets of places like London. We don't want to see Somalian tribesmen in London fighting against Kenyan tribesmen or whatever these petty rivalries that they have between them. We don't want to see that. We want to protect the peace that we have within our countries. And the best way to do that is to encourage these peoples that are now here to go back to their own lands. I mean, to take the Islamic terrorism that we're seeing recently as an example, this is just increasing. We are now seeing more and more of it. And we are seeing the Islamic world all protesting, not protesting the fact that people have been beheaded in France, but protesting the fact that in France you can draw a picture of Muhammad. Now, this shows us this huge chasm between peoples, the huge chasm between Christian peoples, essentially the West, and the Islamic peoples. And we're in no position to judge them and say, well, what they are doing is wrong, because what they are doing is a system that they have developed, and they are different people to us. We cannot judge them. You cannot walk a mile in an Arab's shoes because you are not an Arab. The only person that can judge the Islamic world is members of the Islamic world. And they quite clearly think that we are in the wrong for doing what we are doing. And in actual fact, we are in the wrong because we invited them in. We invited them in and we said, oh, multiculturalism is great and we'll all respect everybody else's differences and we'll have a wonderful utopia. And this is what was portrayed to the Islamic world. So when they come to our countries and then they see, well, hang on a minute, they draw pictures of Muhammad here and they criticize the Quran. We'd better riot and we better start beheading people. They see that as quite a natural response. If you look at what the leaders of the Islamic world are saying, we've had someone from Malaysia saying that Muslims have the right to kill as many French as they like, basically, for the troubles that we've had in the past. There's been other Muslim leaders that are saying, well, this is Islamophobia, this is hate speech, and the West is supposed to be against it, so why is it allowed? So their point of view is a valid point of view, and they don't have cartoons of Muhammad in their countries. And obviously, this is going to cause a friction if you import these people into ours, especially after saying we want to promote diversity, we want to promote Eid, and we want to promote Hanukkah, and we want to promote all these different religious festivals that the different religions have and coexist together. You know, if you're going to promote all this stuff to the Islamic world, then they're going to feel wronged when they can't chop people's heads off for drawing pictures of Muhammad, because that's what it tells them to do in the Quran. I know it sounds ridiculous, but inviting these people into our countries and telling them that they can, you know, we can all coexist along together without making changes, that's just not on. What we need to be doing is encouraging these people that if they don't like the fact that we can draw pictures of Muhammad here, then they should go to a country that is Islamic, where they won't see pictures of Muhammad. It's so simple. The simple solution to the problems that we have is just to encourage these people to go back before the situation gets any worse. And it's not just a problem that we have with the Islamic community that have the extremists among them that will carry out violence. We also have the high crime rate problem that we have with the black community. We even have problems with the Chinese community, particularly in places like Australia and in Canada, where they buy up all the property and the property prices go up and the Canadians and the Australians can't actually buy properties where they are. And the Chinese that are actually doing this are receiving funding from the Chinese government to do this, because the Chinese government sees it as Chinese outposts. And eventually they'll be able to take over entirely that area. So it's all of these ethnic minority groups that we have these problems with. And we have encouraged them to have their own separate areas. We've got Chinatown, for instance. But white people, we are not allowed to have our own areas, but it's only if we all have our own areas and we're all segregated that we won't get these problems. That it's only when we have areas like that when a people group can actually be free to develop in the way that it should be developing, that it's developing in a unique way to itself. If we look at the nations of Europe, they all have slightly different cultures. Yes, we are all part of the same race, but where we have slightly differing languages, slightly differing cultures, over centuries of time, we've produced this wonderful diversity of the countries in Europe. The differences between France and Italy and Switzerland, for instance. Beautiful differences, a beautiful landscape, different housing styles that they have, different shop styles, different foods. A totally different culture, say, between something like Germany and between Italy with the opera there in Italy and the classical music that you have in Germany and the beer that they make in Germany and the wine that they make in France. All these beautiful differences that have only come about because we have kept separate, because we have kept our separate territories. And you can extend that to the races, the differences between the races, the untouched wilderness of Africa and the simple living, the paper houses of China, the making houses out of ice blocks for the Eskimos. I mean, all of these different ways of living and the different cultures that we have only come about through evolving in separation from the rest of the world. I don't mean physically evolving there. I don't mean macroevolution. I just mean the evolution of a group. When you have a people group that is bonded by the same ethnicity, over the centuries, it develops ways of doing things that are different from the other people groups of the world. That's anthropology. That is what was so fascinating to the old anthropologists, the old empire intellectuals, that they developed this science called anthropology, and it was studying all of that. And when you have multiculturalism, when you blend everybody together, you lose all of that. You end up with just one culture for everyone that is just based upon consumerism. And instead of having an identity that is rooted in your ancestors and your culture, people have an identity that is just based upon what they like to spend their money on. And then they wonder why these people get depressed and feel that there is no meaning to life. The meaning of life is to improve things for your descendants in the same way that your ancestors improved things for you. I mean, everything that we have from when we are born is provided for us. So parents provide everything, and everything that the parents use, from the furniture to the housing that they have, everything has been built by people in the past. The first thing that somebody should think is, What is my duty? All of this has been given to me. How do I show my gratitude for this? We're told that the most instinctual thing to think is, what are my rights? What can I take? What can I demand? That's not the natural way to think. That's not the way that a white man thinks. A white man thinks, what is my duty? How do I show my gratitude for all of this? What is the reason for all of this? What is the point to all of this? And the point to it all is to do the same for the next generation, so that they have everything that they need provided for them. The point of life is not to be a consumer. If you're just a consumer, you will lead a very shallow life. You will not be content, and you will constantly be looking for more things to consume. If you dedicate yourself to improving the lives of those who come after you, in the same way that your ancestors dedicated their lives to improving the lives of those who came after them, then you will have a happy life. This is what drove us to go out and colonize these wildernesses of the New World in the first place. It wasn't immediately about doing what was best for the people at the time, because a lot of them, as I say, especially with the Australians, they were just picked up off the streets and they were just sent over there to Australia. But the mentality behind that was to grow the British Empire, grow the civilization, the world civilization, so that there were new lands for new white families to live in, essentially, and tame those lands so that they had a civilization there that they could be brought up in, That was the mentality behind this. So even though it was a very mean thing to just scoop these people up off the streets that hadn't done anything wrong and send them off over there to Australia in these prison camps to build the country, the actual drive behind it was, well, we know that once they have done that, then there will be another country there, and that will improve the lives of millions of families that will be born there instead of being born on this crowded island of England. And somehow we've gone from having that mentality of doing what we can for the future generations to doing everything that we can to take for ourselves right now. And this is the mentality that we've ended up with through individualism and through capitalism, both of which came about through rejecting our traditions. They both came about through the Enlightenment, the idea that man can make his own laws, and man knows better than God, and man knows better than his ancestors. And it's because of that that we end up in the situation that we are in today. It's not because these super bright Africans worked out a way to invade Britain, or these super bright Jews worked out a way to tempt us all to take out their bank loans. It's because we fell for their temptations. It's because we fell for the temptation of taking out a bank loan with usury. It's because we fell for the temptation of importing these Africans that we thought would do cheap work for us. Because we fell for the lies of the bankers. And all we needed to do was just stick to our traditions and stick to our understanding of nation and not go to war against our German brothers. But we did. We went to war against our German brothers. We did all these things in the past that are now causing us harm in the future. And we can't escape from that. We have to just accept that. That is the honourable way to deal with it, is to accept that and try to improve things in the future. Don't be a coward and a victim and pretend that all of this has just happened and it's not our fault that it has happened, because it is our fault. And it's not against the law to say that either. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.